If I could please have all the lights, including those lights over there, Nathan, if you don't mind getting those. Thank you. Well, as you all know who were here last week, I've been showing, I said about 30%, but it's more like 40% of the pictures and some short video clips. Thank you, Nathan, for those too, that I took in May. In Peru. My purpose for going there was not just to be a tourist or to go on vacation or anything, although I suppose that sort of thing happened. But my main purpose for going was to investigate some things I had already discovered before about the dinosaur-man connection. Did man and dinosaurs live together on the earth as I believe the Bible teaches? And last week I did not really show you any of the stuff that I had gone there for, just I wanted to show you the other things. And I think I ended with showing you Machu Picchu in Peru, which is an ancient city abandoned perhaps 500 years ago by the Incas. And it was never discovered by the Spaniards, but we know at least a French explorer went there, but he didn't go tell the world about it, so he doesn't get the credit for it. But an American historian, Hiram Bingham, in 1911, discovered this city. When he went there, it was all covered in trees and vines and moss and all that sort of stuff. And so he began the process of uncovering it. And I was trying to get across to you just how this city was built, you know, on top of a mountain. And I don't mean a mountain like this, but like this. So I have up here on the screen right now, I'm using a program that many of you are familiar with called Google Earth, which gives you satellite images of anywhere on the planet. And now you can even look at the sky with it. And right here where the hand is the modern city of Machu Picchu, and that's where we stayed. And by the way, if you're curious, you know, we're here in the Andes, if you want to know what the elevation is, the whole time that I'm moving this hand, you see right down here, it says elevation, and the numbers change as I go up here in the mountains. We'll see Machu Picchu, the modern city, is just under 7,000 feet. So you take this bus ride, and you go along the river here in this canyon, and then all of a sudden, you begin going up these switchbacks. Up this mountain, up and up and up and up and up and up. And I'm not going to show you all the pictures of Machu Picchu again, but I'm just trying to give you an impression of how high this thing is, and you know, why did anyone put a city where they did? And as Joe Taylor, the paleontologist who was with us, said, these people apparently did not have the concept of, oh, that's too much trouble. I mean, we have that concept. That's too much trouble. I'm not going to do that. Well, for them to do what they didn't think that way, evidently. And so you come up here, and then finally you work your way, and then the city is right here. And if you remember, there was a high mountain peak where I showed you more ruins, and that was clear up here over 8,000 feet high. So you'll notice as I move this around, maybe you can get a picture of the 3D image of how it looks like. And let me move in here just a little bit. Does that give you an idea? There's a city right there. Of how steep this is. So I'll quit that. Now I'll go here. And I do want to show you this picture again because it'll give you an idea of what it's like. But hopefully you can see it as good as I can on my computer. But if you look over here where some of the farming terraces are, it'll give you an idea of how steep it is. Let me move in a little bit closer. Excuse me. I know it's not real clear when I move in that close, but it's amazing how steep that is, and that's where they farmed. And much of the other places like that too, of course, going down all of these sides and so on. Okay, so let me just go through those last final pictures real quickly. And then this is where I left off. We've now left Machu Picchu. We're taking the train back to Cusco. Remember, that's the ancient capital of the Inca Empire that was, or is, 11,000 feet in elevation. So we're actually going up to their capital. And on the way, of course, I took a lot of pictures, and there's ruins all over the place. Nobody says anything about it or points it out to you. And some like this, I believe, are still in use. Here they are farming. And then the next picture, you'll notice how they have these steps here, and that's rock, that's not wood. That's just part of the wall so they can get up and down and not have to walk clear to the end or something. More ruins. And this is the last of the Inca ruins that we saw. This is where we got off the train, got on a bus to head back to Cusco. But what's interesting about this spot here is, you know, you've heard about the Great Wall of China. Well, this is the Great Wall of the Inca Empire, I guess. And this wall used to go all the way across the valley. And this is how the Incas stopped everybody. You could not go any further into their empire unless you passed through these walls. And, of course, you had to meet with their approval. In this city where we changed from the train to the bus, I just thought I'd give you a shot of a city picture in this town. And that's what that is. You see those things all over the place. I don't know what the formal name is for those. And this is that town, and now we're taking the bus. We're going up into the mountains, further into the Andes. And as I pointed out to you before, we're only 13 degrees south of the equator at this point. So even though we're at the end of fall, high up in altitude, there's not snow, except for where you see it in that picture. And that's 16, 17,000 feet and higher, where you do see the snow. Here again, I think, illustrates that they don't have the concept of that's too much trouble, even in modern times. It's not, honey, let's put the farm down here, or let's farm here on the sides where it'd be easier to get to. Let's go to the top of the mountain, where we're probably getting close to 10,000 feet high here. More farming at that high altitude. Now, I told you that on our way to Inca, which is the real place where I wanted to go, we had a crash. And we're just getting ready to pull into a restaurant, which is on the left of this scene here. And the Pan American Highway, which goes from the southern tip of South America clear up to Alaska, is the one that we're traveling on. And people are driving through this town at our interstate speeds. You know, I looked at our van driver's speedometer, and we're traveling anywhere from 100 to 120 kilometers per hour, which, you know, is 65, 70, 75 miles per hour. And so we slow down, he puts on his blinker, and just as we start to go in the left lane, you know, cross it, we hear the skid, and I just knew I was going to be the one to get the brunt of that because I was sitting in the back of the van. And he, as it turned out, he was passing us, and so he hit with his right front and our left front. Both vehicles were disabled as a result of this. But it was interesting to see the townspeople just came from everywhere. And I think I pointed that out to you last week. I just didn't show you these pictures. Including, it looked like 12 cooks out of the restaurant where we're going. Why, I still don't know why they had that many. But here's our driver right here. And, you know, he's just standing back, the same with the other car. And all the townspeople, they're coming over. They're trying to help and repair the vehicles and so on. We thought here that all we needed to do is change the tire. See all the kids all over the place. We were at this place for 6.5 hours because the police took both drivers to the police station, and I don't know what else they did. I wonder whose fault she thinks the accident is. Well, it wasn't our fault. Of course, that sounds like, you know, of course, we got hit, so it's not our fault, but I think it really was her fault. And these crash pictures are not ones I took. They're from two other members of the party. And this is the restaurant where we ended up staying for 6.5 hours. And then when we went to drive away, we discovered it still wasn't right. So on this new van in a town that's out in the boonies along the coast, the Pacific coast, somehow this mechanic here managed to get a tie rod, put a new tie rod on it, and we could drive away. I was just amazed by all of that. All right, this here is why I went to Peru. Number one was because of this museum. There were some other reasons, but this museum here, which used to be the home of Dr. Cabrera, that's his name right here. And he's the one who collected 11,000 Inca burial stones that have these various carvings on them of all kinds of things. Of course, I'm more interested in the ones that have the dinosaurs. But this was his home, a huge mansion. Right now, or now it's in the city square. And I'll be talking more about this man in a future sermon when I do all the research I want to do on the stones. So, and I don't know when that'll be, whether it'll be later this year or even next year. And I'll talk more about who he was and his credibility and how that lends to the credibility of the stones. And now they've put this wall around. It kind of made it hard to get into. But anyways, you go in through this narrow door here. I had to duck down to get inside. Just a close-up picture of where we're going. And then you walk in, and then there's stones all over the place. And what's interesting about these Ica stones is that they're not just of dinosaurs, and I'll be showing that to you. You'll be fascinated by some of the other things that are on there, and other things are just ordinary things. But the pictures that you will see are not what look like mythological dragons. But as you can probably look at here on this picture, here you have what might be called just a regular sauropod, and it looks like what we think they probably look like. And that's how virtually all of these pictures are. And there's tons of these stones everywhere. And I think you can buy them, but you need a good amount of money. Dennis Swift, who led this group, tried to get me to buy one for $1,500. And I said, well, as much as I'd like to have one, I just can't do that. Truly amazing. If these are authentic and were etched by people who truly saw these things, to me, this is one of the greatest testimonies we have of the coexistence of man and dinosaurs. I'm sure you recognize what some of these dinosaurs. You know, is this a T-Rex right here or something of that nature? This looks like a Stegosaurus. This looks like a Triceratops and perhaps another one up there or Protoceratops. What's also interesting is that some of the Ica stones have etchings on them of the Nazca lines, which I have yet to show you. And you'll see this spider out in the desert. Here they've beheaded this dinosaur. In fact, many of the pictures show them hunting the dinosaurs and cutting their heads off. This is the daughter of Dr. Cabrera. This is her grandfather here. But she's the one who kind of has charge of all these things. And that's her father between the two of us there. And I just wanted you to look at the size of some of these rocks. That's one rock or stone behind me there. Again, some of the Nazca lines, the figures. This dinosaur has also been beheaded. You can see that up here. And what's nice about this is I took it, those of you who know things about photography, I took it at the largest size I could possibly take it, just a humongous size, in the highest quality. And while it doesn't show it as well on there, I can move in really close with my computer and look at any particular area that I want and just examine it, which I plan on doing. And, of course, I took some pictures where I got the camera right down on the rock itself, and then I can expand those even more and just see what I can find, if anything. Here again, this looks like a Triceratops. It looks like it has these little horns on its big frill and back. This one here is slightly bigger than my hand. I believe I'll show a picture with my hand soon here. Okay, so I wanted to make sure I took pictures of other stones, just so you know it's not all about dinosaurs. And the reason this is significant is because these stones are not called into question. For example, this one here obviously looks like a chariot or a chariot-like contraption being pulled by a horse. And I believe it was a Spaniard who introduced horses to South America. And if that's true, then at least this stone here has been done within the past 500 years. So we're not talking about stuff that's thousands or even, you know, 1,000 years ago. Again, just an ordinary animal. And here again, although this picture isn't the best, but here's where I've got my camera up very close. And again, I can just really zoom in close on this and take a look at these things. And this is what I wanted to be able to do and just see, you know, again, if I could discover anything. And I got a bunch of pictures like that. Yeah, that's that one that I told you about earlier, so to give you an idea of that size. So not all huge. Some are much smaller. This one here is interesting. Can you tell what these two guys are doing on here? Anybody, just raise your hand or speak out. Yeah, it looks like they've got telescopes, and they're looking up into the heavens. This looks like a comet, you know, and a star, and other things happening in the heavens. So they must have had the ability to make telescopes. Perhaps not as advanced as what we have now, but you know, at least something for they could put to the eye. I mean, you can take your binoculars and look at the stars and the moon and see quite a bit, and that's something very similar to at least what they did. I thought this was interesting because to me it looked like what doctors often use today to symbolize the medical profession, referring back to the time when Moses, you know, put the bronze serpent on the pole, and to which Jesus alluded to in John chapter 3. Is that what this is? I have no idea. That's just what I thought about when I saw it. They certainly could have known about it just as well as we. Some men in a boat rowing along. You can see the fish down below the oars. Again, dinosaur. They've cut off his tail already. Maybe, I don't know, several pictures have things coming out of their mouths like this, and I don't know what that means. Looks like just a calf nursing from its mother. Insects. And that's standing outside looking in, and you'll get a close-up of this stone right here in a moment. But this stone, along with others, shows them performing surgery. And this, I'm guessing, is brain surgery. It looks like the guy's brain. And here's instruments here that they've used on him. Again, these are not called into question, but are used to show how intelligent the Incas were. Here it looks like they're performing a cesarean section on a woman, and some said that maybe she was getting rid of a demon too, because that looks like down there. Now this is the one stone. We know that some stones, when we say fake, mean haven't been done by the Incas, but were done in modern times to sell to tourists. And this stone, all of us wondered about, because it's so much different than all the others. While it looks like a mammoth, it's done differently than all the other animals. All the other animals are done in profile. Whereas this one is done, as you can tell, from the front. It looks like the animal's attacking. And that's just much different than the others. And this is easy. It'd be easy to do because, after I'm done, I'll put in the back and I'll show you a man carving these. But it's relatively easy, I suppose, to do these because we went to a particular place where a man was selling stones and he's got etchings on it. And I wondered, you know, how did you do that? And I kind of indicated to him, of course, he spoke Spanish and I'm English with a little bit of Spanish, but not enough to really communicate. And he figured out what I wanted to find out. So he picked up what looks like a heavy-duty clothes hanger with a point filed on one end, and he just started carving on it and showed me. And so I bought one of his stones. And so that's why these things are sometimes called into question when it's dealing with the dinosaurs, because they could be relatively easy to duplicate. But there's other ways that we've been able to examine these things to tell that they're ancient. Not that they've been done in modern times, but that they're old carvings. And I'll bring that out to you in a future sermon. And we have here, obviously, some kangaroos. What looks to me like a trilobite right here. This will just give you an idea again of what's going on. In this area, they had an 8.1 earthquake last year, so I'm assuming they put this stuff up on the wire mesh there to keep the rocks from falling off the shelves. Here it looks like brain surgery again. In fact, on this picture here, it looks to me like they've got an IV in his arm even. Why are you going to perform brain surgery if the person's not going to be able to recover from it? So, you know, who knows what's going on there? Obviously, again, you can see some more instruments here, more surgery being performed on this individual. This person has had his heart removed. There's still a couple more arteries to cut off, and you can see the guy here with the knife getting ready to cut them off. Dealing with someone the way we do today when they're having surgery, you know, we put tubes down their throats and everything. So if they did that back then, they must have done a very similar thing. Another insect. Now, here's why this stone is important and some of the others. Let me go clear back to the beginning of our trip. And remember this museum here? This is the second day that we're in Peru. This is the National Aeronautical Museum in Lima. And we're going there because at one time they had over 400 of these Inca stones there. We had an appointment at 11 o'clock on this morning to see them. And where is the guy? He's not there. And no one else has a key to the room. And, you know, as we're going through our trip, we're just learning that it seems like there's a concerted effort to, at least in the public places, to get rid of these stones that have dinosaur carvings on them. And I think that just shows the power of evolutionary scientists in our world today, that they're able to exert the thinking, or to influence the thinking of people in our world today. But we did see an Inca stone there, and that was this one. And I was fascinated by that because, okay, here's a stone. They have it in their public museum, not in a private one like the one that I've been showing you. So they are saying by this, we believe these things are real. They're authentic. And here they have a paper drawing of what that looked like, and you can just see some of the stuff that's going on there. Excuse me, that this looks like the stone I was just showing you. Same kind of artwork, same style, and perhaps communicating some of the same messages. So they have another stone just like this one in that private museum, along with, you know, a calf drinking from its mother, and the insects and dinosaurs and chariots and insects and brain surgery and some more dinosaurs and telescopes and all this other stuff. So they want to say, well, some of it's not real, and some of it is. Yes, we believe there have been some that have been done as fakes, but why is it always the dinosaur ones that they consider to be fake? All right, let me move up to where I just was before. A bird? Why would someone want to fake a bird and give that to a tourist? Still more stones. Row after row. This here looks like a man either has been wounded in battle or he's already dead. I don't know if they're taking him to work on him or to bury him. It was very hard to walk around in there because the stones are not only on the shelves, but they're on the floor, they're everywhere. And this museum is always closed unless you have an appointment or something. I'm not sure what Dennis Swift did to get us in there. But of course, then she opened the door and then other people start coming in and then it gets crowded real fast. So I have a lot more of those pictures of that museum, and I'll deal with those, like I said, in a future time. This is the museum here where we went there, took some pictures. I learned what was upstairs. We've come out now. We're kind of sitting over by a cantina, and I'm just thinking, you know, I came all this way, and some people gave me some money to do this. I'm going to be very uncharacteristic of myself and go back and see if I can get up there. And as I told you last week, I tried to make one challenge after another until finally they kind of ushered me out and they closed the museum for that day. They didn't want me bothering because Dennis claims that there's more evidence up there, but it's just being shut off from the public, unfortunately. But we did get to see this inside that museum. Mummies. And notice the hair on this one here. Dreadlocks. So I guess I did that back then. When my daughter Stephanie was here last week, I said, oh, Stephanie, that kind of looks like you with the red hair and the bangs and everything, but she didn't really like that. Now notice here that they did things to their heads to elongate the skulls. And that's exactly what's going on with these here. I'll give you some better shots. Can you imagine that? I don't know if that would create some kind of headache or what that would do, but... I don't know if you've ever heard of trepanation before, but this was at the museum and they're showing them do it. They actually would cut a square hole in the side of the brain and do some work in there and then close it back up. And we know they survived this because there's skulls here that we looked at, and I don't remember if I took any pictures or not, that have the square hole cut in it and the bone has started to grow back, which means they survived and it started to heal. And there were mummies in this museum. And that's an x-ray of that mummy. This gentleman is interesting because, I don't know why, but this his index finger here caught my attention. It's as though he's pointing to something. Or am I just making something of nothing? But here's a better picture of it there. Why they put him in that position, I don't know. You're bending this knee too hard or something, I don't know. This is a hand from a mummy that they have reconstituted with water. And this here is about, if I remember right, 1,000 to 1,500 years old. Now, we've left that museum. Just every once in a while I put pictures in of just how it looks in certain parts of Peru. As we're now going to the city of Nazca, the driest place on earth, we were fascinated to see sand up in the hills. That's what this is up here. It's all over the place. And we speculated on how could you get sand up there? The wind hardly blows there. And this also shows how little it rains, because rain over the centuries would have washed it all down. I propose the theory, based on Psalm 104, verses 5 through 9, that when God ended the flood, you'll remember the Bible says in Psalm 104, that He brought up the mountains and put down the valleys. You know, so the mountains are higher now than they were in the past, and the valleys are lower than they were in the pre-flood days. If that's the case, this could be evidence of that. There was sand on the ground there in that place, and then God just brought the mountains up, and of course they bring up some of the sand with it. And since they have very little wind there and virtually no rain over the centuries, the sand just stays in place. But I'll show you a sand dune here in a little bit that will really get somebody like Dustin Parker very excited. There again, you can just see sand up on the hills. Notice the abundant plant life. Not one blade of grass. Now we're getting ready to fly over the Nazca lines, where we were hoping that they would fly us over some of the dinosaur figures that they made in the ground. And Dennis, you know, told them to make sure you fly these people over those things. And he didn't do it. Of course, I'm so fascinated with everything that I saw anyways, I didn't say, hey, you know, not take me to Havana, but take me to the figures that Dennis told you to take us to. So I didn't want him to think I was hijacking or anything like that. But here we are up in the air, and the lines are out in this area here. But what's interesting is, driest place on earth, but there is water below the ground. You put it up on the ground, and they grow stuff. Now, we're about 1,000 feet up in the air. And here you can see a whale. And I can't remember how far we are from the coast. We're not too far from the coast, so they were familiar with sea life. And then there's also lines. About 1,300 lines all over the place. I asked the pilot what those were, and he didn't know, but it just looks to me like they've dug down in the ground for some reason. Here is a trapezoid. Why did they put trapezoids out in the desert? We don't know. But here's the other thing that I wondered if maybe, hopefully I discovered something. Myself and that man who I said invented that battery, you know, where you put your hands on it and tell how much charge it has left in it. We both looked at a drawing that was made of the Nazca lines, and as we stared at it, we saw a 3D image of what looked like a building coming up in that image. So I'm wanting to study that some more, just to find out what is going on there. And perhaps these trapezoids are somehow helping to bring out that image. You may have to get way up in the air or get another drawing to be able to see this sort of thing. And of course, you can see there's been some water erosion. It's gone right through the lines that they've made. And these, again, they're about 1,000, 1,500 years old from the ancient Nazca people. Here is what they call either the astronaut man or the owl man. He is 90 feet tall. And here's a better picture, or up close. And the airplane ride was interesting because, you know, we're flying up there in the air, and all of a sudden he just turned that plane like this and went around one particular figure. And then when he was done with that, he'd flip that plane over. And I've never done that before. And I thought, oh, man, this is fun. Except when I was looking at something, and then he turned it over, and I'm looking at Scott, all of a sudden my stomach said, Don, look at the ground real fast. And so I did that. And some of these pictures, I would get leaned behind the pilot and in front of the two people behind me and just snap these pictures. No one seemed to complain, but I was all over that airplane. Now, we saw a lot of this sort of stuff, and I'll show you some better pictures than this even. But notice these lines here, some of them. They just go way off into the horizon. I believe they say some of them are 25 miles long, perfectly straight. What were they doing? Here is the monkey. I can maybe get that in a little bit closer. And I don't remember the dimensions on this, but what is interesting about it, and I'd like to check this out some more too, the paleontologist with us, he said the monkeys he was familiar with, and he didn't say that he knew all about monkeys, he said that all of them, their tails generally curl under, whereas this one curls up above. What that means, who knows. Five fingers on that hand, four on this one. And there's a dog right here. And actually, I took a picture of him upside down because that's the wing at the bottom there, so I flipped the picture over. This, again, is interesting. You can just see how all these lines are just coming all out from this center here. And there were several spots like that. That's the monkey again. And there's several birds. And I don't remember what they said this one was like. There's a spider. That's 150 feet long. And what's interesting about this is we believe it's a kind of spider that you can only see with a microscope. You cannot see its detail as they've done here with the naked eye. There's it. Go ahead. Right here? So that's half a football field in length. Is that what you wanted, Cecilia? Was that you, Cecilia? Okay. And again, look at all the lines there. And basically what they've done is they've just pushed the rocks out of the way. So it's not deep. It's not like they're several feet deep. It's just they've basically pushed the rocks out of the way and just made it smooth. For what purpose, we don't know. And most of this, as you can tell, is up on a plateau. Hummingbird. Which is huge. And I'll show you in a little bit. This will give you an idea of the size. Again, you can see all these trapezoids here. See this line going off? I can't even include it in the picture. And this is a bus right here. And there's a highway. Okay, well, right here we've got another figure. Oh, this is, what do they call this guy? I can't remember now, but you can tell he's got something long coming out of his mouth. They think this may have been a parrot. It all depends on what direction you look at it. Now, this is a three-story high tower. I'll give you another picture of it, and then I'll give you some pictures from it, as well as a video from it later. And there's some figures right here that you can see up close from that tower. So here's the tower again. You can see a bus. And here's some kind of figure with five fingers on that hand, four on this hand, and a tree. And then there's another figure over here. I don't remember what that was. It's hard to see in that picture, too. Now, these are quite different than everything else. Either before you had nothing but lines or some kind of figure. But I'll give you another view of this here. And you can see how it's just circles and squares and lines. Again, we don't know what they were doing with that. They call this the Sombrero Man, right down here. Yeah, I guess he's waving to people. Hello? And again, I had to flip that picture over to get that. This particular, well, people thought they were runways. Has stuff all over it. And the reason they called them runways initially is because these things were discovered in the 1920s by airliners, whatever we had back then in the 20s, flying over the area, and the passengers said, hey, it looks like there's a bunch of runways down there. So then they started investigating these things. So we've not even known about them for a century yet. What is that figure? I don't know. To me, that looks like the remnant of the flowers we used to have in the 60s, you know, peace, love, and all that kind of stuff. Another picture of that same thing. And I don't remember what they called this guy. And while we're doing this, we're flying over some of the homes where the people live. Not everyone lives this way, but many of the people do. And then at a certain time, we had to fly higher because other planes are coming into the area. And so to keep from hitting each other, we have to climb up to about 3,000 feet, I think it was. Now here, we're probably 3,000 to 4,000 feet high. And so you can see there's mountains way off in the distance here. And look at these lines going across here. And of course, this one all the way down here. And look how straight that thing is. And here's again one of those things where it's like a spoke, where everything, all the lines come from there. This is the world's highest sand dune, Dustin Parker. You'd probably love this. 9,000 feet high. And it's also on top of a mountain. You can see just the rocky soil coming up through it there. Can you imagine that? 9,000 feet high. And then here's the town of Nazca in the foreground, and then that mountain there. Coming in for a landing. And this is 8 o'clock in the morning. We had no breakfast before we did all that acrobatic stuff. And that was our pilot. Cessna Skyhawk, if any of you know anything about that kind of plane, that's what we flew in. And those were the two other people with us, Alan and Tori O'Kane. From West Lynn, Oregon. Now, I scanned this out of Dennis Swift's book, since they didn't fly us over it. But you can see this right here that looks like perhaps a dinosaur figure, as well as over here. And these are not even the pictures that I saw in our hotel that I told you about last week. One of them were the ones that Dennis had discovered. I would have taken a picture of it right there on the wall if I had known that the guy wasn't going to fly us over the figures. So there's at least three different sites where they made what looks like dinosaur figures. Now, to give you an idea of how big like the hummingbird is, look over here. So it just dwarfs that modern airliner. And again, I scanned this out of Dennis Swift's book. Also in Nazca, again, notice the sand on the hills in the background. There was a huge burial place that had been discovered. And the reason they discovered this is here is because grave robbers somehow found out about it. And they had been digging up the graves. and throwing the bodies aside, the mummified bodies, breaking the pots. Of course, they're looking for gold and things, and they took all that they could find. But in all of these covered areas are the open tombs. And because it's so dry there, they don't have to worry about about the bodies decaying anymore, and you'll see views of that. So we're going to go to each one of those, or we did. I won't show you all those pictures, though. But I know perhaps this picture you can't see well, but there's white things all over the place here. That's cotton that the bodies were wrapped in. And it's just all over the place. Just like how they had done with this one here. They had wrapped his body. Or her body, whatever. And these are two babies. Now, something I didn't know, but this is what Hope House's head looks like right here. I learned that whatever these things are called in your skull, they do not close up completely until you get about 90. So Hope House is closed-minded, I told her this week. So what does that tell you? These people lived a long time. Okay, so you're walking along the trail between each of these burial sites. You see human bone, you know, fragments of it, hair, and other things. I'll have several pictures like that. This new camera that I got, I'm able to pull the back off and see a screen and hold it out, and then I can turn my camera down and look at what I'm doing here. So that's how I was able to get that picture, and then zoomed in on it. So you can see a bone laying out there, broken piece of pottery. They want it left as it is. And, of course, some of the people would cross out and start going there, and they made it known, you get off of there right now. See, here's the cotton like those other people were wrapped in. Now, I want you to notice how long the hair is on these two beauties. Now, watch the next picture. Well, not that one. Well, look at that one, too. That hair has got to be at least 6 feet long. See the vertebrae just about in the middle there? All those clumps of white used to be around bodies. And you can see the, I'm assuming these are femurs over here. Leg bones, I should say. I don't really know my bones that well. You can see the rib cage in that individual. This is a child down here. I'll give you a close-up of this here, and then of this one. And this is interesting right here. I'm sure a dentist could tell us about their health by looking at those teeth. For some reason, they buried a bird with this person. You can see the feathers right here. See the beak, the head, the eye. So all this other stuff that we're doing here, to me, this was just bonus, extra bonus, I guess, because I went there for the dinosaur stuff, but I had to do this, as I told you last week, just because I was part of the deal. You can see where they've just broken pots to see if there's anything in them. They probably found something. And this is the man who was carving the stone. And then I bought one of the ones on the table down there below him, and you could take a look at that later. Okay, so I told you that we also went there. I learned later that we were going to be able to take medicine as well as toys to a shanty town. And this woman right here, Rosa, and then her husband Willie Sr. and her son Willie Jr., she's the one who kind of looks over this town, and so we go to her house and we work through her. This man is Tony, that mythologist I told you about from Holland. And this is Joe Taylor, the paleontologist from Texas. And this is Dennis Swift, the archaeologist from Beaverton. I took this picture just because most of their music here is American music. That's Glenn Miller, for example, right there. As I was looking around their house, I found this totem pole. And all of a sudden I noticed, oh, there's dinosaurs on this thing. Right here. And then down here below as well, there was two of them. And Carl Baugh, a creationist here in America bought two of these for $5,000 a piece. And we brought them back with us. We wrapped them up and everything. And he's going to put them in his museum, I think, in Texas. And that's the other one. You can see the dinosaur up here. And these have been authenticated by the University of Belgium, I believe it is, as far as the dating. And I don't remember the exact date, but you know, we're talking hundreds of years ago that these things were made. So we ate at their home. And here is what you gave me. On this table are the medicines. You probably recognize what you brought or gave me to take, as well as some toys. Of course, it's all in English, and they speak Spanish. So he would write down what he saw on the bottle. Then I would speak to someone who's translating for me, and I would tell them what this is for, and then they would write that down. This is a common sight. This is the top of their house. This is where their dog resides, I guess. Okay, this is the shanty town. The homes are nothing but woven bamboo, all four walls as well as the roof. We went there in three taxis. I'm in the last one. I always seem to be in back. Back of the bus, in the back seat, in the last taxi, but that was all right. This is how the people live. And so here she is starting to give out the toys to the kids. I just want to give you an idea again of how short the people are. I'm standing in back, and yet the women who are closer to the camera are still towering, or I'm still towering over them. Interesting to see the American influence. North Carolina State, I would guess. Old Navy. I assume that's an American company. Maybe I shouldn't assume that. One of you gave me a package that had many cars in it. So there's so many kids, we took one out and just, it's rather than giving one package to one child, we'd take one out and give it to each of the children. This boy came up to me and just spoke relentlessly in Spanish. I had no idea what he was saying. He was talking really fast. Finally, he went away and came back with his bike, and then someone told me, he wants to show you his car. This was his car. That's what he called it. Oh, and notice up here that they have some of the Nazca figures. There's the hummingbird and the killer whale, which I didn't show you. And this boy just wouldn't take his eyes off me. Just stared at me like, what are you doing, mister? And so I thought I'd take a picture of him. And they were telling us thank you. And then we started to walk away. It's getting dark now. You notice again a dog up on the roof, and there was another one here. And on top of almost every business and home in Nazca were these things. But the sunlight's hitting in such a way that makes it look blue, but it was actually black. And what they are, that's their water heater. And the sun hits it and it warms it up, so it's solar heating, and you get plenty of hot water. And by the time we got back to Rosa's house, it was dark. I saw this huge moth the size of a hummingbird getting nectar from a bougainvillea, so I just snapped a picture of that. The next day, we're going to some areas where the ancient Nazca people, 1,000 years ago, made these aqueducts. Almost all this water is underground. This is a spot where just a lot of it is exposed. And they had several of these things. You can just walk down in a spiral and get down to the water. So in other words, whatever the level of the water is, I mean, it might come up as high as where these people are standing, or be down lower, and you could always go get the water. So now I'll get the next picture, look down further inside. And that's flowing, cool, clean water. Now, why did I take a picture of that? Well, the reason I took a picture of it is because somebody doesn't want you to get inside there. Okay, it's a rock wall. That's barbed wire. You can tell this here is a thorn bush. Look at the thorns on that thing. And embedded along the top of the wall is broken glass. And there's this opening right here, and I thought, you know what, I ought to go take my camera there and just hold it up, not stick my face up in case somebody shoots me or something, and take a picture. And I thought, nah, this is almost the end of the trip. Why risk it? You know, maybe they got a live dinosaur back there or something. I don't know. So see, they had several of those places to go down and get the water. That's the other one was looking to the left. This is looking to the right. Another museum with mummies. And I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to go through this kind of fast. Another place in Nazca where they had these ancient aqueducts. It was very cool right here in the shade, although it was hot in the sun. And then just to the left, they've drawn pictures of the Nazca lines. And you know, you would think you're looking at an airport, drawing of an airport. That's the world's highest sand dune from our hotel. Eating at a restaurant there. Heading back to Rosa's house. Her house is the only one we saw around there that had any kind of decoration in front as far as gardening and things like that. And there's the dog on the roof. Now we're leaving and we're driving right through the Nazca lines. There's that tower. See the plane up above? Now I'm climbing up the tower, taking pictures as I go up, and the lines start to become more obvious. So now I'm at the top here, I believe. Looking down on the vendors. More sand on the hills again. Just a street scene coming out of Nazca. And this is the gas station right next to the restaurant where we had the traffic accident. There's the Pacific Ocean. Not a good picture, and I would have put a better picture up there if I could have, but we're driving along the highway, and I kept seeing these things, and finally I realized what was going on. I kept thinking, man, there's prisons all over the place, but it's not. A lot of it's just farms or businesses that they put these walls up around, along with a guard or watchtower, and it reminded me of Jesus with one of his parables. He talks about a wall being around a vineyard with there being a watchtower. You know, when you're way out in the country, and you don't have a 9/11 phone system, and the police are either corrupt or they're just very slow to get there, you need to be able to provide your own protection. That's what these people do all over the place out in the country. This was a huge house built in the 1900s that about 150 people live in now. But some European came over and built this huge mansion. All right, I want to give you an idea of the gas prices. You can see they do it diesel number 2, and then they just sell it as octane 97, 1984. I know ours doesn't exactly operate like that, so I took this one right here. And this is a liter. So you divide it by 2.7 American dollars when we were there, and then multiply it by 2, roughly, and that comes out to about $10 a gallon. Okay, so here's one of the stones that Dennis actually brought back with him to America, and we were able to examine this, and we talked about it a lot, took a lot of pictures of it. I thought it was interesting because it looks like these two men here on the back of the Stegosaurus, and they're cutting out one of his plates. Did they use it for armor, or what do they do? Who knows? And so I got a lot of pictures like this up close. Again, I just wanted you to know that I did that so I can do some more study and research on this thing, these things, and try and figure out how they did it. Are they ancient and so forth? And that's that. And one more thing that I want to show you are the little short video clips that I got. So this is going to kind of go back. The first two are at Cusco, where there was a festival, a Corpus Christi festival going on. And remember, this is 11,000 feet high. It's the end of fall, and it's hot, believe it or not. And you may have seen a picture similar to that before. Well, now we'll put some action to it. And another view of the dancers. I've never had a video camera before, so I'm not very good at this. Hopefully I'll learn. Of course, it's still just a camera, not a video camera. And here they have on display some of the stones that these people cut. You can tell they drilled holes in them somehow, and different grooves and things of that nature. So I just wanted you to be able to see what they could do with stone. Now, that's the city of Cusco down below. We're going up to Sacsayhuaman, which is another 700 feet up. The ancient empire capital. And then here is Sacsayhuaman. Carrie said, "Don, you went way too fast." I know. Next time I'll do better. So I just spun around in a circle. And this is back at the Cabrera Museum. That's in one room. Another room, and I didn't even take video of all the rooms, just I think two of them for some reason. And this is going around that tower, as you can see. Seeing the figures down below. The tree and the hands. Sombrero man. So they're trying to say my name, Donald. Kind of a bleak existence compared to how we live. Say that again? That's a good question. I don't know. Probably because mostly when we were there, we just saw women and children. And I'm assuming the men were off working, but what were they working on the farms? I don't know. So that's looking into one of those wells or cisterns. Yes. And here you're going to get a view of the that high sand dune, and then I'll show you the aqueducts. Wind was blowing a little bit. And here we are just driving.
So we're driving through some of the lines right now.
Well, we're just on the road. I'm sure there's some lines.
Yeah. But from here, it doesn't look like there's anything.
It'd be nice if one guy was talking at a time, huh? And this is taking a video from the top of that tower. And wait to see how the people live here. And we keep asking ourselves what Glenda just asked. You know, what did these people do? How do they How do they live? Sometimes it would be just miles and miles of this. And that's the last one. Okay, I think we can... You know what? Excuse me. I did want to show you one more thing that I kind of teased you with last week. And I need to tell you more what I'm thinking about that, and then we'll be done for today. Or, let's see. Whoa. Okay, I was telling you that I wonder, you know, I'm hoping that maybe I found a clue as to how they built the stones at Machu Picchu and some of the other places around there where all the stones fit together so perfectly. As I was walking by myself around Machu Picchu, I saw, you know, this stone here and this one here that almost looks like they had started to cut out of the stones that they would use for a wall. And I'm just wondering if this is going to be a clue to how they made their walls. The next thing is to figure out if this is the case, if this is how they started out with one piece, and then with just like a piece of paper, you cut it the way you want, and you can assemble it together the way you want. How did they then cut the stone? Okay, we can have the lights back on now. Okay, does anyone have any questions at all or anything? Yes, Glenda. Yes. The atheist who was with us, and I've emailed him, and he hasn't answered me back yet. But I wanted to confirm more about what he said. Because what he did is he read this book here, Secrets of the Inca Stones and Nazca Lines, Proofs that Dinosaurs and Man Lived Together by Dennis Swift. And I brought my book with me, and then I just gave it to him. And he read it and said that he had changed his view on whether men and dinosaurs lived together, that he believes they did now. And to me, that was an astonishing acknowledgement coming from an atheist, which you would think would mean he's an evolutionist too. If he's really thinking that way, he just removes 65 million years of time separating man and dinosaurs according to the evolutionary timescale. And that's how convincing this stuff is. And that's why I wanted to go and examine it. Yes, Gene. Good question. They may have lived there at one time. It's just like, for example, I know in Klamath County, there used to be camels there. Because we have, you know, you can go in the museum over there and you can see their bones as well as, I think, some bison or something else. So, you know, that stuff is more widespread than it probably is now. Mark. Birds, you said? I don't know. I don't remember seeing a lot of birds. So I'm not sure about that. Okay, yes, Paul. Well, that's another huge question that we, you know, how do they move them? You know, how do they build the pyramids in Egypt? You know, right? Yes, your grandson. Go ahead. Well, a lot of the stuff I saw has different times on it, like the Machu Picchu, you know, where they were up on top of a mountain. That's about 500 years old. But the stuff where it was out in the desert, that's anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500, 1,500, even 2,000 years ago. So that stuff is very old. Yes, Becky.
The burial sites, some of the things were very precisely placed, like bones or
You know, I remember asking that question, and I don't remember all the answers that was given to that now. Because, see, in my mind, I wasn't there for that, so I didn't let that stuff stick with me. But my best recollection of that is that they were recreating it. And I don't know if it's because they had found some maybe partially dug burial sites, and they could tell that this is how they did things, or maybe they have other documentation that these people left behind that showed this is how they did it. I'm not really sure other than that.
And do you know if they actually found those raft mummies that way with their heads exposed?
Yes.
They exposed their heads.
Yes, they did, yeah. And why that is, I don't know. Okay, well, you've been really good. I know we're way past what we normally do, and I really appreciate the time that you gave me to show these both last week and tonight. And you'll see more in the future as I do some more research on these things. And I thank you all who sent me on this trip. And most of all, it's for the glory of God. And I just hope I can use it to teach further on the creation-evolution controversy and just convince both ourselves as well as the world the truth of the Bible. And so we want to end now with an invitation. If you have a need for prayer or anything else, if you'd like to come forward now as we stand and sing, you may do so.